Good day, and welcome to the ACLU briefing on Supreme Court decisions. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Tyler Richard. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Shelby, and hello, everyone. My name is Tyler Richard. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm a communication strategist with the ACLU. Today we're going to be talking about the decision in the Title VII cases, the cases of Gerald Bostock, as well as ACLU clients Don Zarda and Amy Stevens. I'm going to turn it over to Chase Strangio, Deputy Director for Trans Justice with the ACLU LGBT and HIV Project, in just a moment. And then we'll be hearing from James Essex, Director of the LGBT and HIV Project. Then we'll hear from Donna Stevens, Melissa Zarda, and William Moore, the family members of our clients who tragically died before today's decision was announced. If you need any follow-up during the call or after the call, get in touch with me via email. It's trichard@aclu.org. And with that, I'll turn it over to Chase. Go ahead, Chase.
Thanks, Tyler. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. This is Chase Strangio from the ACLU. I use he, him pronouns. I want to just start by saying that this is such an incredible moment and victory in a decision that was fought over the course of decades in the lower courts and for years by the individual plaintiff. And in the streets by so many LGBTQ people who fought so hard just to even claim the right to file cases in court, and then the progression of the law over the last several decades. So this is truly a historic moment that is built on the work of so many people over so many decades. And the decision was a 6-3 win, full win for the workers. It was written by Gorsuch. Roberts joined Gorsuch as well as the four liberals, and it's just truly breathtaking. I'm still shaking from, you know, first of all, not being able to download the opinion for a long time, possibly due to the length of it. But also, you know, I think there was a lot of interest and people couldn't download it. And so you had the whole country watching and waiting, and to sort of see the result is really striking. And we can answer any questions about the details, but it truly is very clear, and Gorsuch doesn't really mince words. You know, you cannot fire someone for being LGBTQ in any state in the country because Title VII protects us. So that's incredible. And this really is a rebuke to the Trump administration that has attempted to undermine protections for LGBTQ people through federal agency action since January of 2016 when they first came into office. And that was true with the rescission of student guidance by DeVos and Sessions very early on in the administration, all the way up to Friday's Health and Human Services rule attempting to strip health care protections for LGBTQ people. But ultimately, the Trump administration is not the final word on what acts of Congress mean. The court is, and today the highest court made, you know, unquestionably clear that LGBTQ people are covered under prohibitions on sex discrimination under federal law. And this is, you know, this truly is life-saving for so many people. The LGBT community faces an incredible amount of discrimination, and that discrimination is escalated and far worse for LGBTQ people of color, particularly Black and Brown trans people and trans women especially. And so this will provide vital protections across federal law. And this is a decision on Title VII, and that is the employment protection under federal law, but the courts often use Title VII cases to interpret other areas of federal law, including the Fair Housing Act, Title IX, which covers education, and then 1557, which is the non-discrimination provision of the Affordable Care Act. So this will have incredibly, you know, sweeping impacts for our communities. It will save lives, and it is, you know, an absolutely historic win. And I'm so devastated that Amy and Don didn't live to see it, didn't live to see, you know, that their trauma, that what they suffered led to a sweeping affirmation of LGBTQ rights for everyone in the country. And just returning to the administration's actions on Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, the Health and Human Services Agency issued a sweeping 340-page rule essentially attacking trans people, particularly trying to undermine our healthcare protection. All of that was premised on interpretation of sex under federal law that the Supreme Court just rejected. So they, you know, rushed to put that out before this decision, but it essentially has no effect at this point because they cannot contradict the statute. So this is a, you know, a truly important rebuke of those agency actions from the Education Department, from HUD, from HHS, and you know, it's as incredible and historic as this is. We have to acknowledge that, you know, we have this decision in the same week that two Black trans women were murdered. Our community faces, you know, so much violence, particularly against Black and Indigenous trans women, and that, you know, that is a reality that we have to contend with, and this recognition of our humanity, this recognition of trans existence, is part of the struggle to fight against all of the forms of discrimination that trans people face. But we have a lot of work to do to protect our trans siblings from so much discrimination in all aspects of life. And I just want to say, you know, in closing, you know, yesterday in Brooklyn, 15,000 people showed up to rally for Black trans lives. And that to me was the most incredible moment as a trans person who's organized for the trans community for the past 15 years. I've never seen anything like that. And it was led by Black and brown, queer and trans people. And today's legal recognition of our protections under federal law is truly the consequence of that type of organizing and resistance going back to Stonewall and beforehand. So I am just so humbled to be a part of the legacy of fighting. And I'm almost in tears because this truly is so, so special. And so I'll stop there and answer questions about the law, but turn it over to James.
Thank you, Chase. Hi, folks. This is James Essex. I use he, him pronouns, and I am director of the LGBT and HIV Project at the National ACLU. And I join Chase in exulting over an amazing landmark decision protecting LGBTQ people from discrimination, as Chase said, in employment, but also, I think, in short order in many other contexts where there are federal civil rights protections. The thing I want to add is that sweeping and wonderful as today's decision is, it does not provide all the protections that LGBTQ people need under federal law, and that's for a very simple reason. I think the Bostock ruling will eventually control the definition of sex in every federal civil rights bill, a law that includes sex. But the challenge here is that there are some contexts where there are gaps in federal law, and we need to fill those gaps. So the two biggest contexts are public accommodations, businesses that are open to the public. Federal law right now doesn't bar sex discrimination by businesses that open the doors to the public. It bars other kinds of discrimination, but not sex discrimination. It's a gap that should have been filled long ago, and there's a bill in Congress called the Equality Act that would fill that gap and add sex discrimination protections in the context of public accommodations. The other context in which federal civil rights law doesn't bar sex discrimination is recipients of federal funding, which basically gets at social service providers across the country. And they, again, in this context as well, there are bars on other kinds of discrimination, but not on sex discrimination. And the Equality Act would fill both of those gaps, protecting all women as well as LGBTQ people, and that's something that we think is an essential next step that should happen right away in order to fully protect LGBTQ people in the civil rights context. That is a bill pending in Congress. It passed the House of Representatives about a year ago and has been stalled in the Senate by the leadership in the Senate, and we call for them to release it and get it to a vote. So with that, I'll turn it over to Donna Stevens.
Hi, everyone. This is Donna Stevens, Amy's partner. There are no words to describe what I'm feeling at this present moment, and I cannot thank the people enough that worked so hard on this case to get us where we got to. And I know the last 7 years of Amy's life, she rose as a leader who fought against discrimination against transgender people. And I'm so grateful for this victory to honor the legacy of Amy and to assure people are treated fairly, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Donna. I'm going to turn it over to Melissa Zarda now. Go ahead, Melissa.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to start by thanking our team, and so many people work nonstop for this, and I'm just forever grateful for their hard work and dedication. I'm elated that the court rejected efforts from the Trump administration and others to roll back federal protections. I'm beyond relieved that my LGBTQ family, friends, and loved ones, and the millions across the country will continue to be protected in the workplace under federal law. Don was devastated when he was fired. He wanted to ensure that nobody else had to go through what he did, and today's ruling was the right one. It is the very best way to honor my brother's memory and legacy. My heart is so full and happy right now. This victory will go a long way toward affirming legal protections in other areas, such as education, housing, credit, health care. But, you know, if Don were here, he would be the first to say that our work isn't done and that we, you know, need to call on Congress to pass the Equality Act, and that is key. Thank you all so much.
Thank you very much, Melissa. And now we're going to hear from William Moore. Go ahead.
Hi there. This is William Moore, and I would like to also say thank you to everyone who's been a part of this, Stanford Law, ACLU, Lambda Legal, everyone down the line that's been involved, that's been supportive of all of us and me and my family. And I as well am at a loss for words for what to say. I woke up super early this morning and was watching for this to roll out and did not think it was going to happen today. And I have felt the pain of losing a job from being fired for my sexuality. And then I felt the pain of Don when he went through it. I was by his side when he went through this. So I'm so happy that we've been able to make a change for all Americans to give them some security in their workplace and allow them to be who they are and act the way that they want to act and dress the way that they want to dress and just be who they are. It's time. This is 2020. It's time. This should have happened years ago. I'm so happy. Don will be so proud, and he would be beside himself. This is the biggest accomplishment that Don would have ever made in his life, and he always told me that he never really thought that he had a purpose, and he had such a major purpose, and he did not know it, and he never got to see this, and it pains me that he did not get to see it, but he did it along with Gerald and Amy, and as well, of course, I'm sad that Amy didn't get to see this as well. She was so close, and it was so sad to hear about her loss, but I also want to reiterate, as Melissa did, that this is not the end, and that we have to continue fighting. And we need to get to the polls and elect representatives that are going to represent us correctly in the Senate and as well as the House and get this Equality Act passed so that we can put this discrimination in all places behind us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're now going to open it up for questions. Shelby, can you please give the questions prompt?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a few moments to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll take our first question from Samantha Schmidt with Washington Post.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, this is a question for either James or Chase, or really anyone. I'm most curious to know, like, what surprised you the most about this ruling in terms of both, you know, in terms of the way it was written, but, you know, any pieces of it that were most surprising to you.
This is Chase. I'll start. Nothing surprised me insofar as they sort of stayed so close to what our brief said and the ways that we briefed this case in a textual way. For us, it was a simple, you know, case on the law, and the question was, were they going to follow the law and their own legal principles or not? And so in that sense, nothing about the specifics was as surprising as the outcome itself, because I think you sort of forget that positive good things can happen sometimes. But every word in our brief was carefully crafted, so carefully crafted for this exact outcome. And I will just note that this is an opinion that focuses so much on the plain text of the law. It doesn't go into sex stereotyping. It doesn't go into so many things that people thought assumed would be the way that we would win. But again, it was a straightforward case on just the text. And it took 8 months to write, or to get out. But in the sense of the words themselves, they're right. And it's how we briefed it. And so I guess the outcome surprised us, but the words themselves are exactly how we wrote them.
Thank you.
Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll take our next question from Carrie Johnson with NPR.
Yes, thank you so much for taking the question. I'm reading into these cases for the first time today in a long time. And I wanted to, I was hoping Chase or David could help clarify the effects moving forward on the Fair Housing Act and the ACA and some other contexts. I'm not sure. I heard David say that it seems pretty clear that this decision will have a sweeping impact on various civil rights laws, but I'm not sure where those bounds are drawn and where we should look for action next.
Well, this is Chase. I can start. I think, you know, we obviously ultimately a lot of things are going to be litigated in the courts, but the way in which decisions currently stand in the lower courts is that the courts generally look to Supreme Court interpretations of, federal statutes that prohibit sex discrimination when interpreting other federal statutes that prohibit sex discrimination. And so it's very likely that this will have, dispositive impact on a lot of other cases that are interpreting other federal statutes that also prohibit sex discrimination. And the Trump administration has essentially hinged the entirety of their anti-LGBTQ rulemaking and other executive action on their interpretation of sex, their interpretation of discrimination because of sex. And the Supreme Court essentially just said that's wrong. So to the extent that the rules that they have issued are based on that understanding of sex, the argument that was litigated and pushed by the employers and the Solicitor General in this case, that was the losing argument. And so the regulations can't contradict the statutes themselves. And so ultimately, I think that, to the extent these are now litigated in the cases that are currently pending in the lower courts, of which there are many under all of the statutes, I think it's going to be very difficult for any of the interpretations advanced by the Trump administration to prevail.
And we have no more questions in the queue at this time. But again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll take our next question from Tim Fitzsimmons with NBC News.
Hi, thanks very much for doing this. I'm wondering if I'm seeing some of the ADF responses. They were disappointed that this was being called a textualist finding. Where do you see the sort of next entry points for your opponents in this in this civil rights battle? Do you see, you mentioned some like areas where sex discrimination is not prohibited. I was wondering what you think may be the next area for conservative legal activists who are looking to undo as many of these protections as possible.
So this is James. And I guess I think the next tactic by opponents of LGBT equality is to claim that religious freedom gives them a license to discriminate against LGBTQ people. And that is an endeavor that is already well underway. Our position is that the Constitution doesn't protect a license to discriminate in the context of LGBTQ people any more than it protects it in the context of other civil rights protections. There have been court cases for decades where people have said that religious freedom gives people an exemption from a civil rights law in the context of race and the context of sex discrimination. And the courts have repeatedly said, no, it doesn't. And this issue is, and this argument is being raised again and again in the context of LGBTQ people. The Supreme Court has taken up a case called Fulton versus Philadelphia for argument sometime next fall that is about religious exemptions in the context of the public child welfare system and an agency that refuses to certify same-sex couples as qualified foster parents. But I think that's where this discussion, this issue is headed, and the court says in the Bostock decision that it is not deciding the religious exemptions questions now.
Again, to ask
and
a question.
This is Chase. Let me just also reiterate, too, that I think I said this earlier and James mentioned it as well, but there are a lot of cases that are currently pending in the lower courts, cases around trans people accessing restrooms, like Gavin Grimm's case, cases involving student athletes. And this is a major blow to the interpretation that all of the anti-trans forces wish to advance. But there certainly will be more efforts from ADF and others to try to chip away at this important victory, and we're already counsel at the ACLU in so many of these cases, and we are just going to keep litigating them with all of the fierceness that we have been litigating these cases.
And again, to ask a question, please press star 1. And that is star 1 to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Carrie Johnson with NPR.
Yeah, pardon me for being a ball hog here. I was wondering if one of the attorneys could answer whether the Equality Act currently passed by the House and tabled in the Senate has specific provisions related to religious freedom and discrimination that would help answer this question moving forward.
This is James. There is... There's nothing that changes the current law in the Equality Act around religious exemptions. That is, the current federal civil rights law, by and large, doesn't have any religious exemptions in it. And the Equality Act keeps that status quo stable, and all it does is make clear that LGBTQ people are covered under sex discrimination, and it adds ban on sex discrimination to the contexts that don't already have it in federal law. It doesn't add a new religious exemption.
And we'll take our next question from Mark Walsh with Education Week newspaper.
Hello, all. Sorry, I joined the call late. I'm glad Chase, you're fiercely litigating these lower court these decisions, and I know even in the questions I have heard, you touched on this I just want to ask more specifically about Title IX of the Education Amendments and those pending cases involving transgender students, and just how many times Justice Alito made references to Title IX, what the impact of this decision, Title VII, would have, what is the logic carrying over, and again, sorry. I know you've addressed it even in the last few seconds, but I'm just looking for something a little more specific to Title IX.
Yeah, no, this is Chase. I would say, you know, like everything, you know, these are going to be questions that are litigated. It's going to be really hard for lower courts to try to explain why this, so, you know, 2020 Supreme Court decision means something totally different for Title IX. And I think that, you know, every, you know, lower court decision over the past, you know, 20 years, you know, uses both Title VII and Title IX cases to interpret the respective statutes. And I think that that obviously bodes incredibly well for the outcomes of the lower court cases involving discrimination against LGBTQ students. But, you know, we never take anything for granted, and we're going to be litigating those cases. I assume there'll be additional briefing for the cases that have been stayed. Both Gavin Grimm's case and the Adams case have been fully briefed and argued at the 4th and 11th circuits respectively. So I think in short order, we'll get some appeals court's decisions on precisely this question. But all of these things are currently pending in the lower courts. And I think, you know, I absolutely think that, you know, Justice Alito is upset about that majority opinion, but really his problem is with Congress and the text of these laws. And that's what we said all along, and that's why lower courts have ruled for LGBTQ people under federal prohibitions on sex discrimination under Title VII and Title IX for so long, particularly in the context of anti-trans discrimination.
Thank you.
And we have no more questions in the queue at this time.
Thank you so much, Shelby. And thanks again to everyone for joining this call today. If you need any additional follow-ups or have a question that came up after the call ends, you can get in touch with me again, Tyler Richard, T-R-I-C-H-A-R-D at ACLU.org. Thanks again, and have a great day, everyone.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.